You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
How are ya?
It's Niall.
How are ya?
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 25th of January to the 31st of January, 2021. For some reason, I found that a struggle to say, and we're going to start.
Numbers
off.
Are hard. Yeah,
it'll be a lot easier on February because, as aforementioned, it's laid out neatly 1 to 7, 14 to 21.
Oh,
so nice.
Nice. Of course, it's going to be difficult to remember what week it is, but yeah, no, still nice.
That is one of my issues. Yes. And we're going to start off this week with Pui Pui Molcar, episode 4, chewing, cleaning. In which our focus this time is on Teddy.
She's the leader of the Molcars.
The curliest of the Molcars. The fluffiest.
They're all made out of different wools or something. Yeah,
I saw a video on how to make a Teddy, and it kind of involved plaiting the felt before pricking it with the felting needles.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm.
To get and that
you got
texture.
Different kinds of hairs. You get like yak's wool, you get llama's wool, alpaca's wool. Yeah.
Anyway, Teddy has another bad owner. This time, this one is just hurling trash out the window of his mole car. And then Teddy eats the first bit of trash, and then he's like, ooh, let's test this out. I'll throw some more trash. Teddy's like, yum,
is this
yum,
to,
yum.
To like save on petrol or whatever it is hamsters run on?
I don't know. And then he pulls out, Teddy's loving this trash, and then the owner like goes, oh, figured out what's going to work. I'll just chuck out this entire trash can I've got inside the car.
I mean, it's good to have a little waste paper thing for your car, for your mess and everything like that. Yeah. But that is just literally a bin he has in there.
It is just literally a bin. Yeah. And given the state of my car, I was like, maybe I do need to put a bin in there as well.
You need a mole car. Don't we all?
I think we all do, yes. But no, he gets too much of a taste for the trash and is lured by somebody has done some fly tipping on the side of the road.
It's almost by the sign. It's like they put up the sign afterwards.
Yeah. That's just to taunt the authorities.
Yeah.
They know they'll never catch him.
Yeah, that's about right. Teddy's eaten far too much trash now. He's got a bad stomach, and he rushes to the toilet, where apparently there's toilets for the mole cars as well.
See, I was worried all that stuff was going to get caught in the engine, but it works its way further into his intestinal thing, and the car fills up with rubbish as well.
Yes.
A good visual, yeah.
It's world building, you know. In society, in a mole car society, of course they'd have a separate little garage you can go into to do its business.
Yeah, so he fills it with trash, so he goes to the toilet and then shits out all the trash and his owner.
Who's also trash, by definition, yeah.
Didn't think this through. We thought, I've created some kind of perpetual energy kind of mole car here, but where is all of the hazardous waste going to go? In the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And on top of me, because I'm an idiot. Oh. So the moral of the story is, this doesn't need to be told, don't let your mole car into the rubbish. Don't you be into the bins.
Yes, because you see there's like a specific recycling mole car who's collecting all the discarded rubbish properly.
Mm. Yeah. Putting another mole car out of work now doing that, so don't be backing up his day as well. Mm.
Next week, what's the next week's episode called?
Oh, that's the Wacky Races one, isn't it?
It is the Wacky Races. Pui Pui Racing.
Yes.
And then the trailer for episode 6, I'm like, I knew this was escalating from the general series trailer, but I have no idea what's going on. Well, I've got a good idea, I just don't know how it's going on in episode 6.
They all form that different coordinated quote-unquote teams, and they go and fight demons, because that's how you... Like, that's what really skyrocketed into...
I think it's close.
I was going to say, are they going to team up with the guys from A Town Called Panic or something? I just go mental on it, yeah.
Yeah, another good episode. I've already watched next week's because if you're living in the UK, if you stay up till 11 o'clock in the evening on Mondays and check the Twitter or the Bandai Arts channel, YouTube channel, you'll be able to see the brand new episode as soon as it goes up. Which is now what I do every Monday evening.
Nice to have a routine.
Gotta get my mole car. Set myself up for the week. Next up, we've got... Oh, suddenly, Egyptian god. Suddenly, an idol. And suddenly, pottery. Which, once again, is steadfast in its refusal to explain its jokes to you. So if you don't get the joke, you've got to go online and look up exactly what this Egyptian god's deal is.
I had to do my research as well.
As the first half probably go further with me. Involves Seta, some sort of snake god that represents renewal. And so, but in this world, they are an idol who apparently is constantly saying that she's going to retire, and then the audience convince her to stave off her retirement one more show.
Yeah. I guess she was popular because she's kind of conflated with Hera and Juno. It's like, oh, it's like the super nice, everyone loves female god.
Super nice, everyone loves also hunting? Female god, yeah.
did like the picture I found of her, which is just, it was like a very realistic drawing of a snake with two legs on it.
That's what you need. Actually, this one doesn't have, she doesn't have any arms in the show as well, which I did appreciate from that kind of depiction. Yeah. She kind of gesticulates with her tail, which was fun.
If we're going to have like a pep or a pulpus, you know, just be a big like giant snake, we got to keep it consistent with our serpent gods.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the second half is it Korum?
Kunum,
that's it.
The god of the god of the, well, the Nile, and the kind of mud that gives up pretty much. And he created humanity out of, on his potter's wheel from the clay of the river.
Yes, I was reading that he creates children, he would create the children out of clay. Which really puts into perspective what he's actually doing this episode, which is teaching our three main gods how to make pots. And then once they've made a great pot, gets them to smash it. And I was like, and then I looked at what his deal was, and I was like, oh, is that just like saying those pots are man? And once you've created a great pot, you can admire the pot, but then you've got to smash it. It can't last forever.
Well, you got like Anubis there, sure. You know, you need to create, as a god of the underworld and of the afterlife, you need to be one teach its lesson to you. So it's not like it's not like pottery, you know, the circle of, you know, thing. So God, I've got to misrelay that to them. I suppose Mage is there because, well, you're an underworld figure, supposedly.
Maybe. Yeah.
Also, it's funny just to see them stand on top of the potter's wheel, spinning it with the bowl on their head.
So you got no arms.
and for their pots to always end up like a misshapen lump, but still gets complimented on how great it looks each time.
Well, they put a lot into it each time.
Not every human is made, you know, all the same as everybody else. You know, some of them is going to be a nice, nice vase. Others is going to be the ashtray for your parents. Don't even smoke.
That's pretty much it. It's another good short. Unlike the thing which I am going to drop after this week, Bungo Stray Dogs 1, Episode 3, Operation Errand Run, Finders, Kyoka's, and Rampo's Day Well Spent.
Yeah, it wasn't got on me last week, so I thought it's probably not going to, so I didn't go near it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, the first part's just like a bit with, it's a telephone thing where they're passing on a message and it keeps on getting misinterpreted. The second part is Kyoka finds a cat.
The part I found funny about that was when they had it's your man who takes notes, and I was like, well, how's he gonna fuck it up? I was like, no, he gets it exactly right.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's a little funnier.
They find a cat and they have to give the cat back. The boss wants to pet the cat, but
he keeps building it up to this big thing and he never gets to pet it. Yeah.
Well, OBS is doing some very weird things, but hopefully that's not affecting the stream. Righty-ho. And then the last part, the other part, it wasn't so much just like how anemic the comedy is in this. It was like, they're making this joke about how, oh, we've got a cat anyway, and obviously it's your man, he's keep on going, I'm not a cat, I'm a tiger. And I was thinking, but they do have a cat.
Yeah, they literally have a cat. Yeah. The boss's boss is a cat.
Yeah. That was what pushed me over the edge. I was like, come on.
This is inconsistent.
Yeah, exactly. I want
this cartoon's unrealistic.
Exactly.
It's an episode about Garfield, but in this episode, John Arbuckle has a cat. It's like, he fucking has a cat.
It's
in the fucking
nervous.
Show.
Oh, not
Yeah.
Designs that look good on a key ring, but I don't know. They haven't given the props to legs to carry it.
Yeah, and it may just need the pace picking up. The strips might be fine in like a four panel strip where you go bang, 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 bang. Because
everything they got into, you know, just like a third or a quarter of the time they've been given.
Yeah.
And
a lot of the better shorts I'm watching are like really tight on the comedy.
Yeah. And the last part is probably the best part because it is that. It's because the blooming cat thing ate so much time up with them just wistfully looking at cats. That the final part is basically Rampo's given the job of dealing with all the letters for the boss, and he deals with them. He basically just writes very abrupt answers.
He's like, oh, we need your advice on this trade agreement. It's like, I don't know, do whatever. It's like, I don't care. Or, you know, various quick responses. And the boss is like, I do not care, though. That's true.
Yes.
High low and sell high. That's what I say.
Yeah, all these answers are very brusque, but they are exactly the answers I want to give to these letters. Maybe I should just post them. And then he's like, oh, by the way, I did something to your phone as well. He's like, oh, what? And he's like, I put a cat's
ringtone
on it, yes. And he's like, breath of a sigh of relief, and I was just had a sigh of relief that the thing was over and I don't have to watch it ever again.
His house is clean.
Then we've got Dr. Stone, Stonewalls, episode 3, Call from the Dead. Man, this is a good show.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's going to win me over anyway. For some reason, Nikki is one of my favorite characters in it, so it's like, oh, yeah. Fucking love this bit.
She's super sound, you know.
Yeah.
And
I mean, not initially, but yeah.
Well, she is, because it's like, oh, she's been hurt, man. She's just put up that wall, but she's totally sensitive and soft inside.
Yeah, I just like the character who like would be rough. Other than that, art is the thing that ignites her soul. Yeah, that's fine.
Only one piece of music has survived the Stone Apocalypse, and it's my favorite song.
Yes. So yeah, it's basically two problems. It's like, who is the first person we get to onto our side by using the telephone, and the other part is how does Gen back get back to the village in order to answer the telephone in the first place? Luckily, he's got two bros there to help him out and get past the sniper with the exceptional hearing, as Magma and Chrome provide themselves as bait. In not quite the way Magma had planned, but Chrome comes up with a better plan rather than just being a shield for Magma to punch him.
Great plan, Magma.
You can make fire now.
You fucking
caveman.
Remember
this? Remember science?
We can make fire before. You fucking loon. Yeah, Magma's pretty dumb. It's great.
Yeah. So this is a good way to short out the lights from your Christmas tree, but also another content is going to be a great smokescreen to evade detection.
And I do like how the episode starts with the same phone call we ended last week's episode with, but from the other end of the phone.
To kind of give context to it, and it still has that emotional weight, even though some of the times you're using exactly the same shots and everything. I'm just like, I just changed it to the joke. It's like, Senku, I'm Senku. It's like, no, bro, Thank you.
I like seeing Tiger just one thrust his hand into fucking solid earth and just rip out the fucking receiver on the floor.
I know they buried it, but it does look like he punches like with an open palm through solid rock. Goes, yeah,
this goes ka-chunk. Hello.
And when they're trying to yes, because Nikki's being the guard watching over them as they go into this grave, and then they're getting her to, they're like basically, he convinces her by just letting her punch him repeatedly, Taiju repeatedly.
Well, yeah, she's like, if you say anything other than yes, sir, I'm gonna fucking punch you. And he says plenty of other things, but he can take punches.
Yes. And so, yeah, because at first she's thinking, oh, no, he's tougher than I thought. And she's like, oh, no, he's not. he's as tough as I thought, but he's just willing to take all this damage. And that's the thing, which...
It's like, whoa, he's really strong. It's like, no way, like, I'm actually really strong as well. It's damaging him, but he is standing by his conviction. All right, what are you screaming over here in the grave? Because initially she's thinking, he's been yelling for hours now. It's like, I wonder, is it like the anniversary of their friend's death or something? She's trying to... parse out what the fuck is going on here.
Yeah, and like Taiji's got, when they get her on the phone and talking to Lillian, quote unquote, like Taiji's...
Lillian and her interpreter Sebastian.
Yes. And Taiji's like having to think, like, I can't, I've got to obey Senku, not say a single thing. But then once he hears his actually the impression, he can't stop himself. But not so much as like, almost like he actually does believe she's on the other end of the phone.
Well, they were saying earlier, it's like, it's better off we don't tell you what the plan is, because, and they were right, it's just like, his reaction is like, holy shit, we're saved! America's still around!
Yes, well...
You know, that kind of shit, yeah.
Yeah, and Yuzuriya's eyes are like, oh, I finally figured out what they're doing.
Oh, this is bad, she's thinking. But she's actually climbing up, because...
Yes.
Yeah.
Because she's not just a hair trigger of emotion like Taiju is. Yeah, and so they have the conversation, and yeah, it basically boils down to she makes them tests them to make sure that it is Lillian. And
does the voice sound slightly off? But that could be the phone, or it might have been just like maybe distance. And I've never talked to you directly, so maybe it's different. So I'm asking the questions only a fan would know.
Yeah.
Or a fan or Lillian, obviously.
Yeah. But then when she doesn't believe them, but when she hears the music, it doesn't matter that they're lying, because science has protected the one song which meant the most to her.
Mm-hmm. And they don't even like lie and say, it's like, hey, can you save the rest of her music? And it's like, nope, we literally just have this one song, but we will mind it for you if you join us.
Yeah, just like, oh, what's she call him? What's she say to Senku before she says, I might fall in love with you? And Senku's like,
oh,
no, no, no,
the
no,
kind
no.
of man who stands by his word, yeah, and believes in science and stuff. I could fall for you. And he's like, no, please don't.
stop that.
That
everyone stop falling in love with Senku. Come on.
But yeah.
He was so cool.
He is. Well,
did the whole thing. I was like, okay, how many singles, how many albums have you sold? And then it's like, oh, we can fucking guess, we can bluff. If she knows, she knows. And then the second is going, like, average price of an album was that. And she went on tour last year, so it was a fun account tour, carried a one. She was sold, what, 70 million albums, give or take.
Because, yeah, he's trying to figure out, it's like, I'm trying to figure out her gross national worth and figure out how much he gets per album. And it was like, okay, let me just... and doing like just doing pure math on it, which was fun. And it's like, okay, what are your measurements? And it's like, I've seen like a picture of you next to my dad once, so let me just fucking like try and remember.
A healthy adult woman, age 24 years old, you know, for diet, exercise, she's a performer, you know, she'd be in really good shape, you know, from being on tour all the time. About this, and this.
Mm. His mistake was obviously giving a realistic number. But yeah, it's all pretty good. It's got some fun, like, math rather than science, I guess.
Yeah, and it's got its secret weapon of that song. That's its secret weapon. That we definitely recognized when it first came up. And yeah, it does its job here again, as we get like the very brief, but you get all you need to know about Nikki's backstory. about
of just like this is something that really spoke to her when she was growing up and it got her through some tough times, and it's just like, oh, that's all you really need to know. It's a nice sweet moment and a different perspective using exactly the same piece of music, which is nice.
And yes, yeah, so she's on their side, she takes her cloak off, and we see she's got two massive clubs.
I thought you were going to say two massive guns, which that would too. Be appropriate. Yeah.
Yes. But it'll be another season before we get to the gun. Then we do get to we do see the guy who'll be using that gun at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. In a brief scene where we've got a whole lot of people eating meat near the start of the episode.
Well, he is in the intro now as well. So,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. Another good episode. I think. It's probably going to be too much to expect it to reach the highs of the animation of the last episode, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and like for such a simple episode, just like a conversation between characters is essentially, like, I guess, one conversation, a second conversation kind of thing, and then working out how to get away in a conversation. It's quite entertaining still, looks really good, so...
I would call it taking like longer to read in the comic, but honestly, this one that discovery flew by and it's on side, good to go. All right, let's get that pace going. It's nice. Mm-hmm.
Then we've got Heaven's Design Team Idea 4, where we open up with everybody's been given really difficult assignments, haven't they? If
I remember. Man, I keep feeling this show and it continues. Like, were you given, like, I love the two jokes of your Venus has been given, like, a super, like, a very specific and yet super vague in terms of feedback assignment. Oh, yes.
That's the other thing. Everybody's now got their manga translation names.
Yeah, I did like that. I mean, like, it just makes it easier for me to remember for some fucking how.
Yes, it does. I'm still hearing Kanamori anyway, even though they're saying it. So it's a real, like, you know, Dan of Steel kind of situation here.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. But I'm probably going to remember the god names for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's because they match up nicely to their personalities, I think.
Yeah, that's probably why they went with it. Mm. But
of course, Saturn is the old man.
So she's got, like, make a flying horse and just do whatever. And it's like, and I love the joke of her getting feedback instantly from God on each of the designs, and then Pluto sitting there is like, I gave him the design ASAP because that's what the client wanted, but he hasn't gotten back to me yet. And she's just there, like, basically seething, going like, what the fuck are you replying to her? Why aren't you replying to me? Oh, I felt it. It was painful. But so come up with a flying horse, and your man can't do it because he's helping clean up the shed, I guess. The grandson met us up last episode. But she's disappointed. It's like, oh man, you get to make the Pegasus? I'm so disappointed. But I thought that, like, skeletal horse thing looked class as fuck.
Yes.
Yeah, didn't it?
It's a good design, but you can see where she was kind of going with making.
Feel like it may come back at some point.
I feel like a lot of these bad designs are going
to
come back.
Yeah, because I was like, are they going to go to a pterodactyl from that? But they don't go.
I thought that's where they're going to go, like, right here, right now. But again, it's like some kind of little swerve on me there, which is good.
And then they make a tiny two-legged dog with wings.
Mm. And it falls into a flower, because obviously, you know, that's her thing, and it has to be beautiful and shit. And God's like, it's like, I like the death metal horse better. I like your prior design better. And he goes really technical terms, because your man is like, I'm going to fucking ring up God. He's like, God, you got to be more understanding of the designer's designs and shit. And God's like, yeah, okay, no problem, bud. So God's just like still being more specific and yet completely not helpful. It's very funny.
Then Venus makes Pegasus Ultimate Final Revision Forever.
You know how many files I've made that are like, final version 3.2B final. So many files.
Final version. Just for real this time.
For real this time, please let me die.
And God approves, and that's how we got the bat. But then Venus remembers, I forgot to delete two of the nipples.
I meant to do that. Those are for hanging on to. That and the Pluto's kind of like, hey, can we make it suck blood? You know, everyone else kind of chipping in. And it's like, no, this one just eats fruit. It's like, maybe later it'll suck blood. Yeah. Your man's like, hey, how about we give it like a sonar, like a dolphin, so it can like not bump into things. He's like, cool. Upgrade, upgrade. But the nipples were left in the final design. Once it's finalized, you can't take it back. Like,
that's true. I mean, even a nice workaround. This thing is still going to shit everywhere, but at least it'll be at a manageable rate.
And also, it's hanging off the ceiling. It drops straight down. No mess.
It's like there's a kind of like this design flaw, or this kind of, it's been grandfathered in from the fucking Pegasus. And it's like, no, it's on me. It's all way in here to the bed.
Like it'll come in handy in Dr. Stone, so that's grand. Don't worry about it.
It will.
Then they need to make a. Then Venus needs to make a bird which makes jewels.
Yeah. Because she.
Wait, I'm already working on a jewel-like bird. This is really messed up now.
Sorry, you already have a design that's like one thing and then a variation on that that goes a completely different direction. And she gets a lot of feedback from, what is he called? Is he Hermes, the Steve Jobs-looking motherfucker?
Yeah, probably.
It's Hermes. Yeah.
By process of elimination, yeah.
Okay. Like he's chipping in constantly because he's about, you know, the... We gotta bring it back to basics and shit.
Jewel Bird X12.
The Jewel Bird 10. Get rid of your old Jewel Bird. It's useless now.
No USB port in this bird. No hard drive on. No fucking disk drive on this bird. It's gotta be sleek.
But the jeweled bird is obviously, it turns out to be a hummingbird eventually.
Yeah. They go to the insect department to think, okay.
Figure out how bees fly, yeah.
Check it out. You put kind of wings like this in this bird, it'll be able to kind of stay in place and go backwards. And it's nice.
Because it's gone over all the design flaws of a hummingbird. It's just like, yeah, it has to eat a shitload to maintain
sugar all the time.
All the time, and it's like
pace going.
And they're like, "Won't it die at night?" And then your man adds in a thing. It's like, just put it in rest mode at night, into hibernation, a temporary hibernation. It's like, oh, then it'll be only using 10% power. Goes the one who makes the models, I guess. He's like, yeah, no, that'll work. He's like, in the meantime, I've met a bird that makes jewels. It's beautiful, and he nearly designed a dinosaur, I guess.
Well, it's an ostrich, but a dinosaur.
But a dinosaur, yeah, for sure.
Well, yes, it's not an ostrich until Venus, though, makes some adjustments and both Ross their designs get stuck together and fly into the fax machine. Sorry. It was this episode I realized that book's just a fax machine.
Yeah, and it's actually things get squished together and misunderstood, and it's perfect, yeah.
Yes, they're both disappointed, but it's definitely, it's a design which works, and God's happy.
If the client's happy, like, I guess you're fine, even though neither of you are happy with the design.
Yeah.
What can you do?
There's a real weird one there as well. It was like going back, like the whole thing of like the rocks that us just keep in their gizzards, it kind of get, it's kind of like a rock tumbler, and it polishes them, and so they actually were hunted and killed, not for like the feathers and the meat, but for getting to the diamonds inside their gullets.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't a diamond, it still would basically be like a precious gem that has been naturally made. Yeah.
I think there's an article here from the Adelaide Advertiser, 1929.
Yeah, I just found that one myself.
Wow.
But they're the best section. Where they're trying to figure out a striped horse and trying to figure out the purpose of giving this horse stripes.
Because the client, again, big fucking thing. I want more stripy animals. No fucking, like, reasons given. It's like, I guess we have to come up with reasons. And they're like, is this good camouflage? It's like, no. What if I stay still? No. What if I put on these glasses that let you see in the color spectrum of a lion? No. What if we move around a bunch? No.
What's this for, then?
I do like the punchline that the zebra just gets approved without there ever being a justification for them.
Well, there is a justification for it. It's the tsetse fly.
Oh, is it? Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, it attacks things based off of the fact of large swaths of color, which is why,
so that's why it's got smaller.
That's
stripes,
why the guys are
safe
from the tsetse fly because they're wearing stripy prison uniforms. But
also,
it's not
a heat regulator. Heat up at different rates, and then it creates a kind of little kind of current that goes with its own kind of localized like air current to cool it down.
Yeah, the heat regulator comes to your Neptune.
Because he's stuck with a thing. It's like, make a carnivore that doesn't need meat.
That's it, yes.
He's like, what the fuck does that even mean? Fucking client. What the fuck?
So, yes, he applies that to that, and he invents the panda.
It has to eat a shitload, but it can't, like, regulate, so it needs to live north, but it would be too cold, needs a heat regulator, yeah. Black and white. Got scanned with the starfish. We're in a lot of trouble, guys. Because it turns into like
kind
a tribble,
of a self-deprecation, and anything you can cut off of it will just turn into another panda.
They have the trouble with tribbles. They have to use tsetse flies to kill all of those starfish pandas. or at least put them to sleep with sleeping sickness, I think is what it is.
And, it is, yes.
The angel, she kind of goes in, it's like, oh, I guess I better help out. I'm just going to put a curse on those pandas so they'll fall to sleep even better. And they're like, is that legal for an angel to do? It's like, why wouldn't it be legal? And then God's not happy for
you
once.
You sent to hell. Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll find out next episode. Yeah, because it's... Because, yeah, Saturn comes in with the tsetse flies. He's had that idea. Yeah. And they're like, oh, it was a bit of luck that those animals were susceptible to tsetse flies. And she goes, oh, no, it wasn't luck. I cursed them.
That was it. Yeah.
They're like, are you supposed to do that?
That doesn't sound like an angel thing. It's not.
No.
It's a very demonic thing, apparently.
Yes. So she's got to go to hell.
Is that like getting like bumped down? Is that like punishment?
I think we'll find out next episode. That is for sure.
This show is still great. The fact that it manages to pack in so many jokes about natural evolutionary kind of stuff, and working for a client and designs in an office, and I was just so good.
Yeah, from what I've gleaned, I think the hell is a way for them to get into stuff, so they don't have to always do the same stuff about evolution. They can get into fantastical creatures more.
I'm all for that, because a lot of their rough designs are really fucking good. Yeah.
But it looks like we're getting otters next week.
Otter is the most
demonic
animal of
all. Yes, because that's definitely from the same volume. Because I did see a page with the otters, and you can easily guess who's designed the otter.
I mean, like, I feel like someone else is going to have some input. Is your man going to say it's like, well, it needs to be utilitarian? I was like, where's its pockets for carrying rocks? It's like, oh, we'll put pockets in it. Yeah, no problem.
Then you can tell me all about Jujutsu Kaisen Episode 16, Kyoto Sister School Exchange Event Group Battle 2. Mm. They're getting through these group battles.
It's a beautiful romance, you know. This little session going on between Itadori and Todo. It's just like, oh man, this is still like, no. It's throwing a lot more sparkles, a lot more like, oh, we're fighting, but we're also growing closer as we do so. But the focus is mostly on Panda versus Megumaru.
That was good. That was good.
It's a whole showdown of them because they're both kind of puppets that are being animated by cursed energy. Now,
yeah,
Megumaru is being done remotely by somebody else. But
yeah, Panda initially thinks Megumaru is a thing like him, and then he realizes, you're not a thing like me at all. I'm going to kick your ass.
And he has a panda fighting a robot, a magical robot that runs on cursed energy and shoots it. It's mostly just used it to shoot lasers of various size and intensity. Yeah. And panda had to get in the way because Kukisaki is still there trying to get Momo out of the tree. So it's like, hey, come on out of there. It's like, beat the shit out of you.
Which her threatening aura is probably going to let that happen pretty soon. Panda's... actually, like, the secret of Panda, besides not being a panda, is having three cores. The first one gets shot immediately as a sneak attack. And then it's like, he has to take the shot to actually block a big killer laser blast. And it's like, okay, I'll just use Gorilla as backup. So they're both kind of on the back foot. Your man's like, I only got one core left, but he doesn't fucking know that. And the other guy's like, holy shit, that panda didn't die from my laser. Now it's a gorilla. This is terrifying.
This is much worse. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, he's a panda he's in a panda body, but he's got three kind of core design inside himself, because each of them have different things. So we have the panda one, obviously. He's got his older brother, the
gorilla.
Guy's older brother, the gorilla, and then he's got his shy sister, his shy older sister, who we haven't seen yet, either in this or in the comic. We'll see him as soon. And it's kind of nice as well as a little kind of backstory to Panda as well, how he was he was made differently by Principal Masamichi.
So he's a cursed corpse with emotions.
Emotions, basically.
So he does appear to be maybe an actual fucking panda. I'm not 100% sure, because he was a baby and he was wearing a nappy. He was perfectly capable of speech still. And I was just like, this is weird. I don't know quite what this is. It's not a panda.
Animate being that, was able to join Principal in the dojo on the other side doing the cat eyes. And you're going to see, he's a little, it's getting bigger and bigger.
They use that to overlay against Mechamaru, where he's doing the aura auras on a fucking robot as a panda. I was just like, I love this. This is great.
Yeah, if you're bad for fucking dude to make a mirror as well. In exchange for being able to operate his crossing remotely, he was already born with all his limbs, but he can't even go outside in the moonlight; it would burn his skin. But in exchange, he's allowed to use crossing techniques over a massive range. So, and it's like you know my life, man. Well, you don't know my life either. I'm not a panda. I'm a gorilla panda or something else.
Yeah, it was the kind of panda thing. It was like, I don't get humans. Sometimes they're like really brave and shit, and sometimes they're just like, I don't give a fuck, and they're just lazy. I don't get it. But you seem cool. We should talk later. I don't even know why we're fighting. This is kind of dumb. I'm gonna leave. Oh, can I borrow your phone? mine exploded in the laser blast, I guess. It's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of expanding more on some of the scenes. I did feel like, this did feel, longer than what I felt like I was reading in the comic then.
Yeah.
I was sort of doing it for more action scenes and them just fucking slugging it out.
Fighting on the roofs of the houses, flinging tiles and shit. That was rad. Just a lot of really gorgeous animation, which is mostly why I'm sticking around for this show.
This part was fine because it is just left off to stare at one saying, yeah, we got, the conclusion of this, it didn't take for ages to get through, or to get one episode to get through, even though we kind of joined this episode part way through. So I was like, yeah, that's great. This feels a bit more, better pacing overall. And I like Kieran Takiya Kuroda as the principal. He's also the voice of fucking Kazuma Kiryu. It's adorable little panda son. It's just like, now you're gonna grow up to be a big panda, but I made you a very special panda.
And even the kind of weird pacing things, it ends on a shot of what's presumably going to be the next fight of our cursed weapon users.
Maki and Miwa,
It has just a flourish of animation where it's just like, oh, they're gonna fight next. I'm like, oh, that's how you finish it in by starting the next thing. It's just like, you've excited me and whipped my appetite for it.
Yeah. What was the little short but after the credits again?
Stroll. Yeah.
God, that was it. Oh, they were like saying, hey, make a marathon, do this thing. Because
you go talk to this guy. Hey, give this guy this thing. It's like, hey, I got to deliver a message. And it's the three girls from the school kind of going and he's like, why the fuck do you always get me to do this? And because they don't want to deal with them, basically. It's like, those guys are assholes, or those guys are too scary, depending on the girl. Yeah.
Intimidate. You gotta bring something to Cam or bring something to Tolan. I was thinking, we'll just send in the bomb disposal robot to do it. It's very demeaning.
But the way they make it come across is like, you're really dependable. And he's like, oh, well, okay, I'll do it.
He'll do it for Miwa. Dream of this is to, to escape this bed that he's fucking stuck in and get out and maybe, hey Miwa, wanna go do something? That's also where he's just a panic point and said, you're fucking just about average body as well, you're running around. You could actually fucking experience things. I hate you.
Their weird connection and yet complete different way of looking at the world. Yeah.
Yeah. which would be preyed upon later in the story, but we won't say anything just yet.
Then yeah. It's a, with a dog and a cat, every day is fun, episode 16, in which we discuss the animals' ages. They're both 9. If the dog was a man, he'd be in his mid-50s.
He doesn't act like it.
Squawking like a lunatic.
Yes, discuss like how a dog should probably behave at this age, but then we see that this dog still behaves like it's a puppy. But the cat, on the other hand, he's also 9. He'd probably be 60 years old as a cat. Yes, the dog's trying to get him to play and he's not interested. And the owner's like, well, I guess he's an old man now. And then turns around and seeing him trying to steal...
run away with some toilet paper.
Into the cupboards, robbing food. Oh, yes. You've still got that zest of life in you yet. Get back at those crisps.
That really, that made me laugh so hard that like herself and the dog were the little picture and the cat was like, you know, just like, it's like they're that thing in the corner. I was like, oh, that's a good reversal.
Yes, it's the fact that she's like angry at the cat, but also happy that he's misbehaving. And the dog's just like, this is a game. The cat does want to play.
Everybody wins. Yeah.
And then the second part, we've got a friend of hers
she likes dogs a lot.
Yes,
she's way too trusting. So this cult came to my house and they were just like, hey, we want to tell you about like Space Jesus. And I was like, cool, come on in. And everyone's like, do not fucking invite them in. So I was, hey, what happens to dogs when they die? It's like, oh, nothing happens to them, they don't have souls. And she's like, get the fuck out of my house. Which is a fucking appropriate response to not even cult members, just people in general, I think. Yeah.
I've got a guy would allow this.
Like suddenly like 15 seconds of Rinchi Akota Chan had suddenly invaded this.
I could feel that.
And then the final part is she's pouring out soy flour and then the cat comes along and turns up the fan in front of her to a higher speed and it just all blows in her face. End of episode. It's like,
this is what I'm fucking talking about. Bang, bang, bang. Yes. Just get it fucking done. Get the jokes, get out of there.
I think, yeah, I'm just looking at it here now. It's a 10 second gag.
Still made me laugh, though. Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta pack a memory again. Like Skate the Infinity does that in this eye catch. I mean, he was like a little fucking 5 or 10 second little jokey thing. I mean, give you two of them, either side of the ad break. It's great.
Well, that's why I was always confident with a dog and a cat, because it is the director who did Astro Fighter Sun Red, which was always a thing, which had a longer episode run, but it always felt like he made everything go as long as it needed to go. He wasn't like to try and stretch stuff out to fill that time. If he needed to fill that time, he'd do a bit and then another bit and then some more bits. They would have to be all one thing. And this does the same thing, but with even less time. We got three sketches in that.
If they took that first sketch and they dragged it to the length of this entire episode, it still wouldn't be that long. But they were just like, we can get it done in a fucking less than a minute. Let's fucking go.
Yeah. And we get two more sketches. Yeah. Seiji Kishi is the guy. I don't like much of his non-comedy stuff, but when he does comedy, I'm a fan. Next up, Eagles. What is on the list? It is Back Arrow. Episode 4, Does Genius Come When Least Expected? In which Shubi has been assigned, destroy the dreadnought, kill the man from the outside of the wall. And he's like, okay, I shall go and do that. With my grin on my face, as if I'm not going to really do that. And then we get
I've hired 4 mercenaries.
Yes, the 4
color-themed mercenaries.
Yes. And we get a little bit of his and Kai's past, where they were basically sold into servitude because the people of their town could not afford to pay the taxes.
So he's like, you could escape using your childlike superhuman strength and bend your manacles, but we can use this as an opportunity to get in on the capital and we'll fucking own this country and we'll change this country. And your man's like, okay, yeah, we'll work our way up.
That was a great bit, yeah. Kai, like, bends the handcuffs off And then Shu makes his case, and then he bends the handcuffs back on again. And he's just a tiny child.
So God knows what he's fucking like now, yeah.
Well, he's like massive.
he's at least twice the size of a human, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so he hires these mercenaries. They attack like the entrance to the neutral pass between the two main countries, because he figures they've got to take their ship there, and he's correct because we see them figuring out that's where they've got to take the dreadnought to get to the North Wall.
It's a long route, but it's like it's going along the neutral zone, so it's like we're not going to piss anyone off by driving there. Basically.
They're like south is closer, but there's massive mountains we'd have to go over, whereas we can take a path through the mountains to the north and get to the north without it being such a hassle. But it turns out it is a hassle.
Initially, I was thinking it was a flying ship, and I was like, "Can't you just fucking fly over?" But they do explain there it's technically not a flying ship.
It's not a flying ship. It's essentially magnets.
Like a magnet train ship?
Yeah. How does it work? We do know because it turns out they explain it in this episode. There's liquid metals running underneath the ground in Lingoland, and so all the floating vehicles are essentially using a magnetic repulsion.
Propelling.
Yeah. To float. And so, yeah, the first thing these four fiends do is they spray something which negates that. So
like I'm guessing like a metallic powder or something like that. Yeah.
And of course our heroes don't know that those are clearly feet at the back of the spaceship, so they could probably have just transformed into a giant walking robot.
They'll figure it out eventually. The way this thing's going, I feel like they won't take too long.
I was going to say, particularly the way they get out of this one. And then they get into a fight with these guys. They've got the troops are there as well. And, yeah, all their convictions are essentially destroying by whatever weapon their vehicle does.
Like, I got the fire guy was burn everything. I got the water one was drown everything. And the earth guy was, what, like...
Bury everything,
because earth, yeah. But the green guy was like, what the fuck? It's just blast everything. That's it's just generic blast energy. All right, the fourth element, blast. but it doesn't matter anyway, yeah.
Yeah, because... they're very much mercenaries, it turns out, because they get into a fight. They're outnumbered. They try to move the ship, and I can't remember her name now. It's Atlee's the sheriff, isn't it? And Elsha, is that her name?
Yeah, that sounds right.
The one who's the figurehead. She comes back to help.
She can't move the ship, so she might as well fight.
They're still being overpowered, but that's okay because. They say something about, oh, your blind luck won't save you now. And then Back Arrow has the thought, my blind luck, I haven't relied on that yet. and then multiplies himself, so there's now four of him.
And they're like, what? That's bullshit. You can't do that. And then your man's like, oh, brilliant, because he has no conviction. He can do shit that you can't do. fanning himself, and I was like, that's the stupidest shonenest thing I've ever fucking. I love it, it's great.
Yeah. And so yes, they beat them. He destroys their Bry Heights, but of course they don't die.
They're like, well, we're gonna leave then, because fuck it.
And so yeah, then the army Ren sends like the rest of the army after them, and they surround them, but then Shubi like pulls a slide off his fan, presses a button inside it, and all his troops' Bryhite bands explode.
The Bryhite bands explode, the little cannons, the mobile artillery they have, like, all fucking explode and destroy themselves. And he's just like, hey, guys, I surrender. Take me as your prisoner now. He locks your one inside a bubble inside his little flying motorbike. He's like, sorry about this. I'm surrendering, by which I mean I'm joining your side, but I'm calling it surrendering, which is weird. He just like wants to switch sides because like you guys seem cool. I'm gonna join you.
And Bakker is like, because he was like, well, when they were getting to the fight before the fight, he was like, didn't you say to trust me? And he was like, yeah, I'm gonna trust you. And I was like, it's up to you whether you trust me. And Bakker is like, oh, yeah, fair enough. But yeah, they get into the nice bit is, yeah, the village are like, no, particularly Bit is like, this happened last episode. This is not happening again this episode.
I'm glad to see he's fucking learned a bit. They all pull guns at him and go like, no, you're our actual fucking prisoner now. You're not making decisions for us or anything. And he's like, but I'm joining you because you guys need a brain, which is like very insulting, I gotta say. But
yeah. And we learned the doctor has been with them for a year. Before that, he was wandering the world.
More and more suspicious as he goes. Yeah.
So they've got him tied up. He explains that the stuff they sprayed will wear off in an hour, but we've probably got to worry about worse things than the troops I brought getting to us before that hour's up. I think that's where we all left off at the end of the episode.
I think it cuts back to your man like getting, it's like, hey, where's the fanboy? Yeah. Where's my guy who I'm going to take over this country with? And she's like, yeah, he betrayed us and he joined the I was going to say the rebels, but like he joined the unaffiliated group.
Yes.
And he's like, fucking what? Kind of pissed about it.
Yeah, but it cuts enough to like, you're like, is he going to be trusting in his buddy that this is all part of the long-term plan, or is he going to fly off the handle? I just cackled so much when Shubi betrayed all his own troops at that point. It was just so well done. And as I say, the highlight, this is bizarre to say, is the CG robots week in, week out in this show.
I mean, they're doing cool fucking moves and shit. Like, he doesn't like a hand spear and an elbow and a kick and another thing, because he's split into like four different robots now. Because he gets to do all the fucking cool attacks. And I was like, shit, that shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah,
the CGI robot fights to be great. Is that legal?
It can be done.
Yeah, the Four Fiends robots are really nicely designed, because they're called the Four Fiends. But at no point do you think. I don't want anybody listening to this to get the impression that their robots are somehow devil themed or anything. They look more like IMAX circa 2002. They're all sort of like very white and coloured jelly.
Yeah, they got the very plain white thing, but then each of their colour things, like the fire guy has flame looking red bits coming off, and the green guy has green coloured blast shaped bits coming off. You know, it's just like they're themed slightly differently, but they're all the same design.
A transparent plastic, you can see the inner workings of the circuit board. That was cool.
They like all these robots, at least all the more designed ones, like Back Arrow's one and their ones, they have the transparent plastic, so I'm guessing that's in the model kits.
Yeah, I was thinking like, you know, like your transparent Game Boy, for example, you know, that kind of look.
Yeah, definitely a transparent plastic, but I'm wondering like if it does have inner workings on the model. That would be nice though.
I suspect not, because I don't think there's any inner workings in the actual robots that we see, because it's more magic, yeah, because he put Bit in his shoulder pad, as we mentioned last week, which is one of these clear sections.
And they do have to physically like move inside a blank sort of colored space.
Yeah,
just like it makes a solid thing around them. Yeah, it's less a robot, but like to call it a robot gets you a rough idea of the design.
Yeah, and the Dreadnought is probably going to be much more of a robot, I would guess, when it transforms.
Fucking, the hands and feet are right there. I don't know if the head's like tucked away, and that's how they think they're getting away with this. Or maybe one of them is going to turn into the head. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, I don't know. But it'll be exciting when it happens, because that's why they've brought it in so early, and for it to be so clearly a robot. Though I'll laugh if it just doesn't do that in the same way, like White Base clearly looks like it's supposed to be some sort of horse robot in Gundam, and it never turns into a horse robot.
I bet they pushed for us. It's probably some apocryphal story and pushing for robot and say, no, not allowed.
It's too silly.
Next up, we've got Skate to the Infinity Part 4, Adam, the Matador of Love.
Best title this week, easily.
I know Matador.
This creep.
He's so weird.
he was raised by his aunt. No wonder he turned out weird.
Great. We expect great things of you.
Yeah. Just like he's been going inside on to have an afternoon tea. And it's like, oh, you're doing very well for the business. Haven't shamed the family today just yet. Oh, one of these days you're going to find marry a good woman and then, you know, and settle down and then.
But she needs to be worthy.
His fucking aid in the back. It's just like, when he hears that, it's just like, yeah, you're backing up the wrong tree there, ladies.
Listen, out of this show, he's the gayest character, and that's fucking saying a lot, man. No, not going to happen.
Oh, he's being all creepy. He's like, oh, dang, I must race you. Reckon he's like, no, hey, apologize to me for saying he was empty vessel devoid of any worth or soul or content. If I say no, I want to race Langa.
So his bet is, if you lose, I get to race this guy, which is like, you could just bet that guy. All right, fine.
I do like how four episodes in, Shadow now seems the most reasonable person in this series.
Yeah, like, before him is like, oh, Adam breaks racers. It's like, isn't that like what you were doing, Shadow? I was like, no, I was just throwing firecrackers at their wheels. Like, this guy is going to fuck you up. It's completely different. When I make you tumble off the skateboard, it's like, you're still going to be there next week at S. You know, it's fine. It's grand. I'll
give
you a lift.
Coming here, like, you know, just showing up in the back of the car all the time. I mean,
he's disguised completely gone. Yeah.
Yeah, no, at least really give me time, because I couldn't even disguise it properly. So I just got to put tape over the company logo, over the shop logo, so no one knows, like, my secret for civilian identity.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, Cherry and Joe are like, oh, we want to challenge him as well, because we've got 7-year-old beef with this fella.
I was going to challenge him. It's like, no, I'm going to challenge him. It's like, well, fuck it, I'll challenge you to challenge him. It's just like, oh my God, you fucking idiot.
Isn't that bit that's there, they're both trying to be kind of hard boiled? Yes, that grudge from 7 years ago. No, my grudge from 7 years ago. No, I'm the one with the grudge from 7 years ago. I'm that dude, I have that backstory. No, fuck that.
You get your own backstory. This guy's my fucking enemy. Being massive children about it, it's great.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, they make it clear that the pair of them were at school together in this episode.
Yeah.
Mm. But yeah, it does end up being Reki and Adam at the end.
You have to go through a training montage. You had to learn how to do the, I've forgotten the, like, the inside slide thing.
Right on the edge of the board.
I can't think of the fucking name of it.
Tight quarter keeping on the inside.
And they're talking about, like, Adam. Oh, he's a legendary guy. You know, he can, looks around, skate uphill.
With the love hug.
That's impossible.
The love hug is the move.
Why did you call it that? That's terrible.
Because he's a big old creep.
Yeah, because he's a creep. Yeah, no, you're right.
Because he loves to smoke. Keep my cigarettes in an airtight cigarette case because it improves the flavor. Oh, yes, smoking. I love it so much. I'm becoming a bad guy. This may be a metaphor for Becky. It's like, you know, oh, it's like, yeah, you know, when this ingredient is refined, repugnant as it may be, become a finest flavor or a fine accompaniment to the main dish. Wouldn't you agree, Joe? Because you're a chef, aren't you?
I think that was a similar, like, thing to what they were doing earlier with the kid who was like, the kid's giving him the training montage, and it's like, okay, you're going to drink this protein shake, you're going to do this, and then they go out for burgers, and he's like, dude, my body is a temple. I don't do this kind of thing. It's like, you're a little kid, eat burgers. And Shadow's there, it's like, what's the matter, little kid, can't eat 5 burgers? And is it, Reki's like eating the, like, more burgers and poutine and fucking, like, loads of other fucking, because he's Canadian.
The beef is that if Adam beats Reki, then he gets to race Langa next.
Yeah.
Who apparently we learned his nickname is Snow.
Everyone call him Snow because he's a snowboarder. It's not a very good nickname, honestly, but okay.
Well, it's been long enough since Canadian rapper Snow was relevant, so it's safe to call him that again.
It's in the public domain again. Yeah, sure.
To go like Google or look up for Snow the Scape and saying, who is this? Oh, he's put up a hip hop record. Oh God.
Yes. So the race is Reki gets like a massive head start because you say Adam is just there monologuing about cigarettes, and then Reki's like, oh, I'm gonna easily do this. He's nowhere in sight, and then he launches himself, catches it with Reki, and then starts dancing with him.
just to be a real creep about it.
It is
very dangerous dancing as well.
That's it, because his thing doesn't seem to be so much that he wants to injure these people as much like destroy their love of skateboarding so they'll never skateboard again. And it has to be like people who are promising skateboarders he wants to destroy.
Yeah, it's not fun if they don't, like, if they couldn't be great if they kept at it. It's just like, no, I need to wreck them before they hit their prime, because that's really funny to him. And he's like, he initially has him as it's like oh my god, he completely outskated me by like dancing, making me look like a fool. And he's just like playing it for the crowd at this stage, and he's like, I guess I'm just gonna give up. But then he remembers, he's like, hey, he's not doing it because he can win, or he has to win, and he's doing it because he wants to, isn't that right? And he's like, yeah, I gotta do it for my friend. And it's the power of friendship.
Boom.
Yeah, it's the bit as he slowly like sneaks past Adam, as Adam's just taking in the adulation of the crowd.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, wait, your spirit's supposed to be broken now. You can't pass me out.
So that's when he has to use the love hug.
When he one-ups him as well by doing, oh, that trick you just did, I did it just with the back edge of the board. It looks super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Rubino, isn't it?
Hmm.
And the love hug just appears to be playing chicken with whoever he's competing against as he suddenly starts coming up the hill towards you.
Hmm. So I thought he was going to like stab him with the horns that are on his skateboard, that kind of thing. But
it's got to be plausible deniability on there, you know. Oh, but that scared us to my path. This isn't my blood. He smeared across my face as his fucking broken body flail downhill.
That was pretty nasty spill, all right. It's an interesting thing, because obviously that's him breaking them, and the way he's doing it is very playing into the whole Matador thing, you know.
Yeah.
Fighting the bull. Mm.
Yeah, and the dancing as well is...
Yes, yes, yeah.
Is very much.
It's not just the half cape and the mask and the fucking whole outfit.
Slaughtering the opponents. No, it's a real skate until blood has been drawn.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you get a good idea of like how much product he must be using during the day when he's doing these lectures for his aunts by how wild his hair is when he's appearing as Adam.
Well, it's the same gel, but he just uses it to either slick it back or make it all big, basically. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't treat his assistant very well either, so I suspect they're going to turn on him at some point.
I get the sense he may have been one of these young prodigies he took an interest in, because he knows how this game is going to go. And he's trying to say, sir, you really should make your flight tomorrow so you can be there in time for the lecture. And saying, oh, no, I'm going skating again.
It'll only take me 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably, in a sense, trying to protect these other skaters from having to go to what he did, I think.
Yeah,
could be.
Yeah, so I'm curious if we get straight to Langa next week, or whether he's got to go through Cherry and Joe first, whether they have to resolve their beefs.
Yeah.
They still haven't decided which one of them is going to challenge it, but they wanted to both go at the same time. So, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're only episode 4, much like Back Arrow. I'm like, this has accelerated incredibly fast. I don't know where we go throughout the full series.
Well, there's probably more down than meets the eye as well.
Yeah.
Like his motivation for doing what he's doing. Like, it's certainly... It seems like he's trying to be defiant of the expectations of him as a scion of a major corporation, or whatever it is. His aunt's already clearly just using him just to fucking build him
for
money.
Keep their own prestige, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it did a good job of setting him as, like, a threat, you know. We already knew he's kind of creepy, but as well, when he does his fucking jump start, I was thinking... We've been joking saying he's a skateboarding vampire, but motherfucker, he was just fucking running like 50 miles an hour from a standing start. He was fucking crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of like one throws a board like fucking Thor's hammer and then jumps and lands on top of it.
Launches the board and launches himself. It's crazy. And the game
looks all class, of course. So, it's bringing more skateboard weirdos. No, maybe he's kind of fucking mercenary skateboarders getting brought in to take out a competition.
Fucking why not? Yeah.
Then we've got Dragon Quest, The Adventures of Dai, Episode 17, The Death-Defying Savior. two death-defying saviors for the price of one.
Yeah! Because I knew it was like, oh, Sylvie Hunkel coming back. Okay, I expected that. But the Crocodile as well! Yay! That's what I was really looking forward to seeing.
They led with Crocodile, and it's like, oh, don't worry. I've sent another guy, much stronger than me, the other side. I was like, I don't give a fuck, it's Crocodile. It's like, I'm just glad he's back. That's fine. Crocodile Man's on point. That's all I wanted.
Yeah, so basically the setup is Di and the old man whose name I want. That's it.
I know, like, he had Duck in his name.
Yeah, I assume it's supposed to be remind you of Bad Luck, his name.
He's a bad duck because he's a human. So that's a very bad duck right there. That was close.
They get ambushed by the wizards.
What's it? Mistvern.
And the little goblin wizard.
I was thinking like the I never realized till now, but I mean, like, obviously same designer at the start, but like the wizard guys with the masks look very similar to the Hollow Knights, and I was like, oh, they actually look pretty good next to each other. Yeah.
And Mom and Pop get ambushed by Holder. Oh shit!
Holder and two fucking demonic cows
who look like
Minotaurs.
They look so much like Muppets. I could not stop thinking that they look like Muppets.
Well, that's the thing about Dragon Quest monsters. They look kind of ridiculous, but they're like level 99. They can wipe your party in a single attack. But it's still a fucking fuzzy purple Minotaur.
Yeah.
Yes, this is not good for Pop, because he's faced this guy, and last time he faced it, their mentor died.
Like, I was kind of cool with Pop being like, oh, this is the guy who killed the mentor, and then it's like, oh, that also gives Mom mistakes in it, but then it's like she gets taken out immediately and just has to sit back. It's like, god damn it, give something for Mom to do, would you, lads? Come on.
I think it's a plot point, because I think she switches jobs after this.
Like, maybe she's a better warrior than she's a cleric. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the impetus for these plot points here. Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the pictures of these Minotaurs. Yeah, they got quite the funny face.
I've realized there once you put me to certain names together that Mom and Pop, like Mom and Pop Shop.
Yeah. I already got it a couple of weeks
ago. That's the Dragon Ball naming scheme in this case.
So basically the two sets of guys get their asses kicked till about 15 minutes, and then Crocodile shows up in one fight and absolutely kicks their ass, and then Hooking Uncle shows up, rescues everybody, the towers get blown up, and then next week we got Holder versus He Uncle's gonna get revenge for his dad again, but this time against the right person.
Yeah, it's the person who actually killed his undead dad. There was a few good bits, like up to them getting the shit kicked out of them as well, like where, you know, Pop's firing back the crackle or whichever lightning fell back at it.
Sizzle.
They're canceling it out. I liked that Dai was kind of like, my man's like, time to use my one sword technique, and the old man's getting his ass kicked by Hollow Knights. It's like, okay, beat the shit out of the wizards. They're actually very weak physically. Yes. I'll beat up the knights. And then the old man's just headbutting wizards. And I was like, okay, this is kind of rad.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. Like, it's not just them getting their asses kicked for 15 minutes. There's some good bits. And then a crocodile shows up. So fucking excellent. Good news all around.
And then Di leaps on his shoulders, which is even better.
It gives him a big fucking back hug. I was like, ah, they're friends now. This is great.
Yeah.
And even when he says, when your man's like what the fuck are you doing throwing a giant rock at his fucking crocodile? And he's like, I'm switching sides. He's like, fucking what? good stuff.
It's just nice when someone comes in and like, oh my god, Crocodile's come in with the steel chair.
After seeing all this, I'm like, is he an influence on Jim Bay in One Piece?
Oh shit.
I'm like, the massive dad.
Being scar crabbed. One eye.
Do they have the scar on the same fucking eye? I think they fucking do. Shit. Okay. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Like an amalgamation of things and all, and maybe they're drawing on and could be interpreting and yeah, it was surprising for words, but like, you know, it's kind of the convention that was probably established beforehand but interpreted in this particular way, and they're like, oh, I see.
Right. Anyway, there's some doujin for you. Right, doujin writers, that's your idea. Jinbei and Crocodine teaming up. Or just hanging out.
I mean, if you say doujin writers and then teaming up, you know you're going to get something different from that, right?
Whatever takes their fancy.
Mm. Well, as long as it's all crimes in the speedboat.
Yeah. Then, Niall, tell us all about Healing Good Precure, episode 42. Nadoka's choice, something to protect.
Yeah, Nadoka's feeling off, man. Just thinking, she's not finishing her lunch, and then obviously kind of worrying her parents, thinking, "Oh my gosh, she's getting sick again. Is she feeling unwell?" You know, I think about her parents a lot over the course of this, because she's just running off, beating up monsters from hours at a time. It's like, where have you been? You recently fucking overcome like a very serious illness. Why are you still? They haven't even called in home. Kind of thinking, oh, like, obviously it's kind of a free drug. Because, she's not herself today. She's bubbling into the wall. She's tripping over nothing. Sounds like things, kind of things like that Nada would do. And I was like, yeah, sounds like the kind of things I would do. Hey, don't do that. Trying to figure it out. It's just like grabbing her. It's like, hey, buddy, Norika, you all right? Bit freaked out actually before I left when Darius and to die, but it's just kind of more coming from it that I'm a kind person, or at least I think I want to be a kind person, but you know, I kind of left that dude from like there left him for data strength. You know, I'm really a kind person, and it's just kind of like, well, you're a kind person, you know, and it's nice that you want to mind after the people, but you gotta look out for yourself as well. I mean, he's coming at you. He's an anthropomorphic disease. He's done. He would do harm to you. He's done harm to you before. I know you want to be a nice person. You want to be like, you know, somebody who has, you know, wants to listen to what other people say and put yourself in their shoes. But dude, you don't have to be responsible for people's like bullshit requests of you. You just have to accommodate their fucking selfish shit. Just because they made you feel bad about it, when you're obviously just fucking thinking about themselves anyway. So don't worry about it. Hey, if the doggy is sick, we gotta go fight him because he's monstrous size now, eating all these mega parts. And he's fun wrecking the town up. So they go out to fight him. He's a big master man. Looks pretty cool actually. And thinking, oh, we're fighting him, but then he's trying to pull the whole thing. It's like, oh, help me. Help me, if I'm saying, oh, there's something inside him there. Don't fall for a cure, Grace. He's trying to play you. I think, oh, she's going to fall for it. She's going to, like, you know, probably going for it again. If I'm saying, she gets fucking pissed off and say, no, not saying fuck you, because she's a nice magical girl, but saying, no, you're just trying to fucking take me for a ride, and the girls are right. I gotta look out for myself. You're being completely fucking unreasonable. You're just one like kind of saying, "Oh, I want to do this because don't pretend to be into it. I don't need to sanction your bullshit," and which I think would be applicable to current events as well. You know, for trying to tie this into disease and health and trying to save up and saying, you know, you don't need to fucking be responsible for other people's safety. Well, if they can't take care of themselves, if they get themselves willingly involved in dangerous shit, obviously dangerous shit. And it bites them in the ass, it's not your responsibility to fucking bail them out. You don't fucking know them. You don't know who they are. They're putting you in danger just by fucking being around doing their shit. So it's kind of like, imagine what goes like, just getting pissed off and saying, no, fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck friendship. I don't want to be your friend. You're a fun disease. Fucking get out of here.
You're toxic to my life. You have toxic friendship.
Yeah. So they fucking blow them up. But don't blow them up all the way. It's kind of blow up the giant monster exterior you had around. It's just like, oh, okay. Well, didn't get him all the way. But oh no, King Bjorgen has turned up. He's emerged from the other world. He's appearing again. And he's like, oh, thanks, girls. I lost track of where he was. And then absorbs Jarvis in. It's just like, whoa, he's evolving again. It's like, haha, I have hands now. What evil can I do with this? It's like, shit, he's even stronger than before. He's going to mess our shit up probably next week. See what goes. Yep. That's where the Tinagat tie off between them. I think there's still a little bit of that hole there because they're probably going to feel bad about him now. He's been absorbed by the real villain. Maybe there's probably somebody that can, like, at least release his soul into the ether or something like that. Maybe with the help of the rest of the animals under Kira Garten around the way there. So Queen T-18, the big dog. And we get to see that cool, that lion wearing armor and tiger with an eye patch. We might hope might see them next time, sometime soon.
Finally do something.
I want to see them, you know, it's like, they'll be like the magical animals with the parents. They get the going to get a magical transformation. We get my animal's like a cool tiger with an eye patch instead of a little rabbit yoke. But yeah, this is kind of good to see, like, you know, magical girl shows are very wholesome and they want to teach you, like, you know, like good lessons to a parent, how to be kind and how to, you know, acknowledge and maybe think about, be considerate of other people's experiences. Boss knows when to say, no, that's too bullshit. Don't try and guilt trip me into fucking going along with any of your crap. I don't have to be responsible for your safety. Got to take care of myself. So fuck up.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. Kindness is a thing that's good to impart on people, but self-kindness is also good, especially if they're just going to, people are going to take and take. And literally are diseases. That's another reason to not help them out. Yeah.
Oh, the real villain was fault equivalences all along.
Right, and finally we've got Kimono Jihen, episode 4, Mission.
Still just me, or?
No, I watched this one as well.
Hey, okay. I thought this was a good one because it actually managed to cram what, like, into two
stories into one episode. Yeah, I was like, oh, if there's going to be a bunch of episodes like this, I'm definitely much more on board.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fully into Kitaro territory.
Oh, absolutely, dude. A dude shows up with a love yokai problem?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a Kitaro fucking thing.
Yeah, so the first case is a guy has fallen in love with a Nekomata.
Well, initially, like, I fall in love with a beautiful woman, and they don't realize what it is until after coming back from the bathroom, he pounces on a rat. And goes like, nah, and puts it in his bum bag full of rats. It's like, I'm gonna give it as a present to my girlfriend. And they're like, oh, that's a cat monster. Yeah, I see the problem there. In the meantime, while he was in the loo, Khan's like, hey, you got to give me Cabana's head. And I was like, if you help out with this case, I'll give you Cabana's head. And they're all, everyone else is like, except for Cabana, is kind of like, what the fuck? No way, dude. And he's like, no, that's fine. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. And she kind of hands him two rats. Is like, here, now give me Cabana's head. It's like, okay, I need to explain to you what the problem is here. it's not we need rats to give to his girlfriend, it's we need to allow him to say to this woman that he loves her. That's the client's request, I think, in this case.
It is, yeah.
They're being private detectives and they have to find this woman so he can confess to her.
Yeah,
I guess.
It's like, when did you meet this woman? Oh, is it this I assume it's a hostess club.
Like, it's an adult club, so the kids can't go in, and they have to be explained to this several times. It's like, because the man's like, no, they want little kids in there.
Yeah, and it's the spider kid, Kabane, and the fox girl. Because Akira is taken off this mission because Akira should only go on missions where he's dealing with cute things because he's not very good at dealing with scary things.
I like that. It's like, hey, there's going to be a bunch of fucked up scary shit because it's a cat monster. And it's like, if there's a cute monster, don't worry about it. We'll send you on the thing. And he's like, cool, I'll help with the paperwork here. And he's like, okay, yeah, sure. That's great.
In the wrong line of work, buddy.
comes into, like, the second part.
But it's fine. So they don't have to go to the club because, hey, there's a two-tailed cat wandering down that alleyway.
Yeah, your man's like, she always comes out this time. I wonder where she is. It's like, there's a two-tailed cat that looks like a woman there. It's probably that one.
Yeah, and also
they confront her in the alleyway. It's like, hey, are you a cat monster? And he's like, oh, you're working for that detective dude, aren't you? Here are my cat minions that have man faces and too many bones inside their skins. And I was just like, oh, I didn't need to see that. That was nasty.
And she's like, oh, well, he'll be one of these soon. And they're like, oh, no, he won't, because you haven't seduced him like you have these guys. He's in love with you. And so here you go. Here's your opportunity to declare your love to this cat lady.
And they're kind of like go nuts, and he's really nervous, but he kind of like, you know, I was just going through the motions in life, but you really like lit up my life and this beautiful kind of thing. And then like shots of a cat being like, oh, you're winning me over with your words, but it's a cat. And it's weird. It's super weird. And everything works out great.
Yes, because we get a photo of them after they've settled down together when she's still a cat. So it just appear that he's owning her as a cat now.
It's weird, but like they were initially like, we probably got to tell the boss about those cat face men. But and she's like, no, don't worry. If I'm not hypnotizing them, they'll turn into dudes again.
Yeah,
they'll be fine, I guess, from the many months they've spent as men.
Yeah, they say they've turned back like an hour later. They've turned back. They've started turning back into men again.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So happy ending on that one.
Yeah, the super happy ending. I was not expecting that, especially with the guy catching rats with his mouth and cat-faced, man-faced cats. I was like, this is horrible, but no, super happy ending.
And then the second one is, Kier is now treating Kobane as his senpai, and I can't remember
because
why.
Because you'd think it would be on the prior case or any of the other shit, but no. Yeah, there was a cockroach in the bathroom, and he kind of picked it up by the leg and put it out the window. And it's like, fucking, you got brass balls, dude. You're my boss now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so insists on going on a mission to investigate these mysterious deaths which are happening related to a waterway.
It's probably not so bad. It's like, okay, it's a bit, sewer workers are being killed in this, one of those paved over rivers. And there's probably going to be, like, monsters and slime and shit and... He's just kind of like, and tries to go on the mission in a hazmat suit.
Yes.
That doesn't really work. Where do you get a child-sized hazmat suit? That's crazy. I suppose, yeah.
And then we learn, well, they encounter a frog man who attacks them. After they've
initially they encounter leeches, which I was just like, these aren't the monsters? Like, no, these are just horrifically large leeches. Don't worry about it.
I'll put them back nicely in the water. And then they discuss Akira's background. He's come to the city to look for his twin, who Kobane reminds him of. He comes from a village where him and his brother were like the first men born in the village for like 100 years.
Yeah, I think it's like every 100 years a man is born into the Yoko Ono, but Yoko Ono, fuck's sake.
Every 100 years, Yoko Ono was born.
Oh, God, that's really funny. Yeah, you know what the fuck. My brain's just farting.
Yeah, so they got the idea that they weren't wanted there, so they ran away.
Because it's weird for like two of, like, we get a new guy every 100 years, but it's like two of them, that's weird. So the brother's like, yeah, we'll get out of here, and you don't need to do anything. I'm going to do all the heavy lifting. You can just sit back and fucking chill. You're useless anyway. And I was like, whoa, okay. That's a little different.
The other little detail from the first part is we learned why the office has got half of it set up as a bar is because he used to have a partner who was running the other half of the building as a bar, and don't bring it up.
Still touchy about that. Okay. We get a bunch of
a mysterious tanuki shows up after they're attacked by a frog. Who Akira finds adorable. It's brought a message from their boss and a vial of blood.
Yeah, and it has the same haircut as the boss, same eyes. It's just the tanuki, though. Don't fucking think too much about it.
It's down the CSI. CODIS.
But yeah, this is just giving us the little bit of information that Akira is not aware that Inugami is a tanuki.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess Kobane is just too fucking dumb to the world. Because, like, that's the end of the first episode as well, where he realizes, like, I'm learning about... He went on the mission because he wanted to learn about love, because he wanted to learn about his parents' love, but he's learning about romantic love, and your man's like, should I go off with this man to learn about love? And your man's like, oh, God, kid, no, don't ask me that question. That's weird.
Crazy.
But he's like, love is like light, is the thing you get. So, and giving gifts, like rats, to the person you love, giving something useful... It's like an act of, what do they call that? Love act. Act of, I can't remember. There's the different kind.
Yeah, it gives him.
A pack of tissues. Yeah, because tissues are useful. which was great.
And eventually, I'll think of something for the other two.
Yeah, it's like, you guys seem cool as well, so I guess I love you, and I will get you tissues later because I'm a weird robot zombie. But anyway, yeah. They're fighting frogmen, and it's going initially fine, except. Well, I mean, like, Cabana's, like punching the frogs in the guts.
Frogmen.
They're not Kappas. They look like fucking, like muscular tree frogs. with human teeth. They're just nasty. he's just punching him in the guts and ripping out their guts. And Akira's just like, oh, fuck, this is really fucked. The Tanuki's also, like, just flying around, like, headbutting them. It's pretty sweet. But Kabane has to block a frog getting Akira with his body, and he's just there being eaten by a frog. He's like, don't worry, I'll grow back. It'll all be fine. But that causes, I think, that is that the thing that Akira convinces himself, and then the words of his brother, you're useless, you can't do anything anyway. When he said, it's like, I could maybe make a little puddle freeze with my ice powers, but like activates ice powers and just freezes the entire thing, including Kabane up to like his neck in ice. He's like, oh, fuck, I'm sorry. He's like, no, dude, that was really fucking cool.
it's all very quick, that fight at the end.
The
biggest thing is the build-up. It's because they're discussing whether he wanted Akira to show him his powers earlier, but Akira's like, no, it will kill the things in the water, I don't want to do that.
And your man Kabane is like, yeah, that's why I didn't kill the cockroach or those weird leeches that were eating my head earlier, because it's like, if it's not going to do me any harm, if I get any other option, I'm not going to kill a thing. That's but obviously the frogs weren't giving him much of an option.
And is the reveal they've been hired by the parent of all these frogs?
Yeah, like the old gigantic frog that Inagami is talking to as a Tanuki, which was great.
Yes.
Where he's like, Yumen's like, oh, don't worry about it. They'd all went crazy from eating humans. And once you get the human flesh, you know, you lose your pride and you basically become a monster. So it's like, it's grand. They were eating their own young and everything. There was nothing there for him. It was just like, thanks for killing my children, and they'd gone crazy. Which I guess happy ending in its own way, but a little different than the other one.
But I feel like this is here to set us up of like, this is the line that should not be crossed by these monsters. This is the danger each of these people are in. You could become one of these frog people down the line if you're not careful. It's they're nice little short contained stories, but they just give you like a little bit of world building, a little bit of character building, a little bit of what the stakes are in the overall story. It's quite effective. But
like, it keeps up this kind of pace.
When Vlad Love comes along, I'm not going to have time to watch it anymore.
I know. It is good though. Like, worst case scenario, I'll have to drop it out of busyness, I think. So far, so very good.
Well, hey, I got 15 more minutes not watching Bungo Stray Dogs, so.
You can watch the first time.
5x speed might get
more spinning. So that should be fine. I briefly checked in on One Piece, but I didn't properly watch it. I just wanted to see that it was starting the Odin backstory.
I need to get down on that as well.
It does quite a clever thing of, it ends, the first half ends with is the quote-unquote modern day. It just goes into the eye catch, where it opens up with Ace, Sabo and Luffy, and then the second, when it returns after the break, it's now Roger, Shanks and Odin.
Fucking cool. Right.
So I'm curious if they do anything to the opening credits next week, given how long they're probably going to be suddenly focusing on an entirely brand new protagonist for probably months on end before they get back to Luffy.
Yeah, the problem is that you got to get back to the main shonen guy, but I was like, but this story's really fucking cool.
Yeah, I can't remember how long it went in the comic.
I think it was surprisingly quick, yeah.
Yeah.
Then people will like Odin better, and they want to think, well, why can't we just have the cartoon be about him now?
Good news is you get a second Odin, so that's fine.
have different complaints about that, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, maybe we're down the line. Righty-ho, that's everything for this week. What day next week, Niall? Is it back to Wednesday?
Is it what? No.
No, we're staying on Tuesdays, are we?
It's Wednesday, is it? No, Wednesday the 10th. Yeah, that'll be it.
That'll be it, okay.
You got kind of garbled there, and I thought, did you just say Valentine's Day? I thought, okay.
No, well, I did not today.
May have plans for that day, but
that's
okay,
a Sunday.
Right. Anyways, isn't Groundhog Day enough for you when we're doing this? Or indeed Setsubun, if we're going to keep it Japan, the first day of spring in the old calendar.
Yep. Okay, we'll be back here next Wednesday. That's your lot, folks. Thanks for joining us if you're on the stream. Thanks for listening to us if you're listening to the podcast. We'll be back here with more of the same next week. Goodbye.
Ta-ta.